John Chillag, Reel 9.
And yes. The documents that I fell across in Boston Spa are now all housed in the Interior War Museum. And some of the documents that finished up at the Ministry of Defense, I believe, are also here. Some of these are duplicates, and some of them are unique documents.
You obviously have continued a great interest, I think, in documentary evidence of the Holocaust. Am I right in thinking that?
You are right in thinking that. There are two facets to this. My sort of library background was that I was a specialist in what is called grey literature. And grey literature encompasses the sort of material I just described, report literature of any kind, and a lot more sort of unpublished and semi-published material. And the long period I spent since 1963 until 3 years ago at the British Library, as the National Indian Library was renamed, were in that field of work.
And the Holocaust came into that?
The Holocaust comes into this for two reasons. The so-called German documents, which I briefly described a minute ago, certainly fall into this category. And so does a lot of material that covers unpublished material on anything, but in my context, on the Holocaust. And obviously, knowing how the system or the systems work make it easier or make it more successful. It doesn't make it easier. It makes it more successful to dig out the information that I have dug out over the years.
What do you do with the information?
For many years at the British Library, they asked me, but now you're going to write your memoirs. I haven't got around to it. This long tape may go a long way towards it, but it still is a bit. I'm utilizing the material that I do find and try to dig deeper and deeper to find all sorts of details that are actually there, but are not easy to find.
Are there, you know, you obviously are aware of the general coverage of the Holocaust, the sort of conventional wisdom of it, if you like. Are there aspects of it that you feel are just not covered? Questions, perhaps, which are never asked of the Holocaust?
Probably all questions have been asked, whether all of them have been answered, and to what extent is probably a different story. And I'm not even so sure that it is a different story. It is just finding the material. It may not all be expressed or written on paper or in interviews or tapes or whatever. But I feel that most of the material is there. And perhaps more than just there for the asking. For the plain by, it is getting more and more accessible.
Would you say that's the case from the point of view of the Germans and their allies, the perpetrators?
I think it is, because with a lot of this stuff, not only is the document needed, but the corroboration that it is the true record. To give you one example, I mentioned earlier this letter by the SS officer saying, "Why my father was buried rather than cremated," and the circumstances surrounding that. Now, under the whatever year rules of the public records office, the transcripts from Bletchley Park covering these aspects are either already available or will be available at the next tranche of release. And I'm fairly certain that at the right time, with the right research, the copy of the letter that I got now will also appear somewhere on the Bletchley transcripts.
So how would Bletchley Park have got that letter that that SS man wrote?
I have a feeling that all military traffic, be it by letter or otherwise, between the SS and similar organizations in Germany, long distance was transmitted by what today is called electronic means, either by telegraphy or the, at that stage, still in kid shoes, picture transmission or facsimile transmission. And I have a feeling that the letter I referred to, that I picked up in the printed form, would also appear in the ether somewhere in the Bletchley Park pickups. When they are released, they will be confirming the story.
A very big question, which is continuously being asked, is how much information did the Allies have about the camps and what was going on, the extermination programme? Do you think all that information is there of what the Allies knew?
It is certain that the Allies had far more information that was released then and even today. Some of it was intentional withholding for whatever reason. And some of it is that so much of this so-called grey literature is still unprocessed. It doesn't help the people who had to go through camps when they get deciphered or read 50 or 100 years later. But it probably is still a very great historical significance for researchers.
Do you get any sort of direct evidence that perhaps the information is just not there, that it's been removed? Is there any suspicion of that, do you think, in the case of the archives you've come up against with the Holocaust?
I have come across no things that were actually removed. I find things that have not been officially found or certainly not released if found. I know it's not the same, not the answer to the question, or not direct answer, but that is certainly the case. And I don't think it helps to interpret material that has not been read and just sort of picked up because just discovers that period, so it must be in it. That doesn't necessarily follow. And of course, the various official secret acts in various countries operating in various ways did not help, certainly for a long time after the event, to find the information one is seeking.
I know with Cold War documents, which I have a particular interest in, often whole sections have been removed, and one thinks they are removed forever, that they've been shredded or what have you. Is there any evidence of that at all? I mean, this is quite clear when you look at some of the document cases.
I think if the people removing it done it well enough, there is no evidence or no other way of finding out. I'm not condoning it for one minute that it happened, but once that occurs, one has to go to different channels altogether. And this dichotomy of different interpretations of the secrecy laws in the States and in Britain, where one can find out about British documents in the States and US documents in Germany and so on. It doesn't make life any easier.
Mm. Is it upsetting for you when you sort of delve into the sort of details of this event which impinged so directly on you and your family?
I think I can say in my case, and I don't necessarily put it down to the fact that I know perhaps more how to handle both the questions and the answers and the material. I don't think it matters that much. It is like an Aladdin's cave, and everything you find is a bonus. But how to find, not necessarily the document, but the cave itself, is the biggest problem. In most instances, the information is there. Just finding out about it, and in some cases, getting physical access to it, which is the main problem.
What is your opinion of the work we are doing, the personal testimonies? Is this an important part of that, do you think, or otherwise?
It is a very important part. But I personally don't know how much of this work is or is going to be computerized. Because as I talk to you about some of the tapes I have listened to, there is in many tapes something that affects somebody else, to whatever extent, and how one can link those is probably as big a problem as getting testimonies per se. Even if something is very much relevant to another person, if it doesn't fit in God, those snippets from a couple of hours or longer tape.
You were saying, telling me about your English wife, and you had three children. Do you talk to your family about your Holocaust experience?
More to my children than to my wife. I can't explain it, but that I do.
What is their reaction?
They want to know quite a bit, and they are happy to learn more as life goes on. As of course, eventually, I will have a copy of the paper I'm doing now, and they will have access to it. Listening will bring out more questions, provide some answers perhaps as well, but so it goes on. It's not a static situation.
D- do you think the fact that, you know, you went through that Holocaust experience, including Auschwitz and then slave labour, has it made a difference when you think about it to the to your parenting style? Has it made you orientate in a certain way towards young people, your own young people?
I hope it did in some ways. I don't know. I can speak now quite a bit about my experiences. It's still not very easy. But I suppose as time goes on, more and more of the story comes out. Parenting, better parenting, I'm not so sure that it makes any difference. I hope I'm parenting well. I know I don't. But I don't know, but it, I suppose it must be different.
I mean, you lost so many members of your family, and I suppose if that in itself would be an effect on your children, would it?
Yes, in two ways. Well, I am with the family. I'm talking about the origin of the family. And they don't have any grandparents, aunts, uncles, which in inverted commas, no one. And that's that.
It hasn't made you overprotective of your children. Are you aware of any?
I don't think I'm overprotective. Underprotective in the sense that I let them get on with it. To the extent that perhaps a good parent or official things are then the fuse or whatever, which I directly kept on doing myself and teaching the children how to do it. I'm sure they know it now how to do it, I think in essence that sort of situation is quite clear.
Do you think it had long-term effects on you? The you know, apart from this great loss of your family, and of course the trauma in Hungary afterwards, were there sort of lasting effects, either in a physical or psychological way?
Well, in the physical way, I got Martian blood, which I explained earlier in the paper, or something resembling Martian blood. Apart from that, I think physically, psychologically, I'm sure I'm injured, but as time goes by, I think I can live with it more and more. Whether my life would have developed the way it did, from whatever point onwards, who knows, but that happens to everybody. If only whatever. I can't really say that they sort of made all that difference. It must have.
You were saying earlier that your family and the way you were brought up wasn't particularly religious. Did it alter any way your feelings about religion, of God, what you went through?
Well, as you say, or as I said, his family wasn't religious. I'm not religious. I'm technically, I suppose, Jewish. my wife is Kathy, that's where I'm filming. My wife goes to church. My handicapped daughter goes to church because my wife goes to church. One of my sons does, the other one doesn't. So it's very difficult to sort of itemize things.
Did it make any difference to your sort of sense of Jewishness, Jewish identity, the fact that you were persecuted so much, the fact that you were Jewish?
Having been brought up in some respects even anti-religious way, I don't think Jewishness as a religion affected me that much, or for that matter, any religion. Perhaps it would be too harsh to describe all my forebears as complete atheists. Probably that's what they were.
I wasn't thinking so much of religion,
but
your identity, as you know, your Jewish identity.
But the Jewish identity certainly must have affected my life. Certainly until post-war period, also in 1950 or so. 1950 was actually the year I got married in a new world.
Do you feel more Jewish or less of Jewish because of it, do you think?
I don't want to start a treatise on race or origin and all that. Religiously, in that sort of context, I don't consider myself anything. In inverted commas, racially, I suppose I am of Jewish origin. My children are mixed, and so it goes on. I don't think it comes really into it.
Have you ever returned to any of your internment places?
I returned to, and I think most of them, I returned to Auschwitz. The story behind that one was I went on, through my handicapped daughter, I was still internationally involved in that land. It was a European conference in Warsaw. And my boss asked me if I want to do anything outside there. And I went to Auschwitz. And found out that my Polish boss for the conference was an organizer. Not herself, but some of her family. As poets, they are also Russians. But it didn't leave a mark on Auschwitz was different. Everything is so septic. Very interestingly, perhaps. I know it's a reconstruction, but the actual barrack I was in during the quarantine period has been reconstructed and is there. But it's obviously not the original. Ever since I discovered where my father is buried in the cemetery in Norfolk, on any trip that sort of takes me to or through without too much diversion to Bochum. I usually drop in. But until literally a couple of months ago, I never spent quality time in Bochum. This time I went to be this professor to a lot of things, but a lot of documents, a lot of information. I even had an alternate tour of the area. Of the town, I'm not talking about the concentration camp details. There was somebody there whose father was killed in one of the camps, and an old time communist. And he took me to the Burita on an alternate tour, not what they show you when you go to the tourist building. So, yes, Bochum I know quite well. I've done my slave labor. On the anniversary in the 50th anniversary of the liberation of the camp in Buchenwald, the Americans found me somehow and invited me to come to the 50th anniversary. Celebration is the wrong word, but commemoration. And I did go home. And it was a very interesting journey. It wasn't easy. But from a certain British point of view, it was very curious altogether. The British liberation efforts after the war were concentrated on Bergen-Belsen. And there's a lot said and written on Bergen-Belsen. But they didn't worry too much about the American turned into German, so to talk. And although the BBC was alerted and said that they were turned out, they did not at the British press. The British press took some things over from German newspapers or cable agents. But I was only one of two people there from the UK. There were 17 Albanians. I mean, all that is nothing to do with the Albanian situation as it is at the moment. There were 17 from Albania. There was something like that. There are two people from the UK, and no, when I say official, either press or government. Because it was not in the occupation zone originally. Anyway. But yes, I met quite a number of people whom I must have. Because, I mean, you can't quite imagine. I mean, when you talk that I was in this barrack and I was in this barrack on such and such a month and all that, you knew that they must have been adjacent to you, but nevertheless, you can't remember them. There was the one person who pointed out that photo looks like you in the museum. It was very interesting. It was also very interesting for the Americans. It was the first opportunity after 50 years to enter that part of Germany. And the large number of the original liberators.
You were talking about Elie Wiesel. Mentioned in your... Yes, because... he wrote very movingly, didn't he, about the camps. And I couldn't help but think of him when you were telling me about your father's death, because, of course, he experienced the same thing. And this question is always in one's mind. of, you know, in his case, it was a feeling of relief, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Is it a complicated...
It is complicated. Not complicated probably in the sense that you were asking me, but yes, obviously in his final days, my father wasn't in hospital that long, but it was pretty harsh.